This is Tell Me More from NPR News. I'm Celeste Headlee. Michelle Martin is away. Coming up, a controversial new public service announcement recreates the Trayvon Martin shooting using actual 911 tape. It has the aim of overturning Stand Your Ground laws. We're going to hear from the group behind that ad in just a moment. But first, we have another perspective on gun violence. Journalist Brian Beutler had long opposed aggressive police tactics like stop and frisk. Then 5 years ago, he was shot multiple times by a mugger on the streets of Washington, D.C. But that experience didn't change his opinion on racial profiling. And he explains why in an essay called What I Learned from Getting Shot. Brian Beutler is now a senior staff writer for Salon.com, and he joins us now. Welcome.
Thank you for having me.
It's been 5 years. Why write this essay now?
There was the Trayvon Martin shooting and the George Zimmerman trial. But then after the verdict, there was a lot of commentary, and it sort of mooshed together with what was going on in New York with their policing practices, stop and frisk. What finally made me decide, okay, it's time for me to say something, was when an actor named Cal Penn, who himself had been held up in D.C. when he was working for the Obama administration and who himself had been a victim of racial profiling at airports because he's South Asian, came forward to support Stand Your Ground laws or policies in New
Stop
York.
And frisk.
Stop and frisk. I decided there was an opportunity for me to write something that wasn't just about myself for the purposes of writing about myself, but that I could add something new, inject something interesting into the conversation to help get people thinking about it in a new way.
You tell the story of the actual shooting in really grim detail, kind of startling detail, and I won't make you recreate the whole thing, but basically, essentially what happened was what?
A friend of mine and I were walking around late at night on a weekday. We took a turn onto a sort of a side street that's poorly lit, had history of gang violence on it. And it was in our neighborhood, and I'd been up and down it, you know, hundreds of times without incident. But this time we were approached by a couple of African-American teens, I think, both, you know, wearing hoodies and blue jeans. And they said they wanted our phones, and we resisted a little bit, but not for too long before one of them pulled out a gun, handed it to his friend, and shot me. I fell to the ground. They ran away. But I got up, and I thought that I was okay. And when I realized that it had been an actual gunshot,
as opposed to rubber bullets.
I thought maybe this is a prank. If I fell down from what I thought was a gunshot but then got right back up, it's probably not a real gun, because if it was a real gun, I'd be laid out. And so we decided this couldn't have been real, and we were probably in a little bit of denial, had a little bit of a little bit too much adrenaline working against our reason. But after a few steps up the street, it was clear to me that I had been shot. I saw my shoulder bleeding, and that's when we started running because we knew there was kids around with a gun, that they didn't get the phones that they said that they were after, and they were willing to shoot people. So we started running. My friend called the ambulance. While we were running. And we got about a couple blocks before I realized that I wasn't just suffering from a shoulder wound. There was something else wrong. I got very weak and couldn't run anymore, slumped down onto the sidewalk and just tried to stay conscious. The ambulance arrived quickly. They revived me by, you know, injecting fluid into my veins, picked up my blood pressure, and got me to the hospital very quickly. The doctors told me I needed to go into surgery to have my spleen removed.
Because it had a bullet in it.
It had been ruptured. I had also sustained injuries to my lung, my diaphragm, my stomach, my kidney. And when I woke up, I didn't realize how extensive the surgery they were going to do was, because I thought, well, if they have to take out my spleen, that's just one organ. People get their appendixes removed all the time without needing long hospital stays or long recuperation times. But it turns out that when you have internal damage, they basically cut me open down the abdomen, and the extent of the surgery led to me being sort of out of commission for health reasons for 3 to 6 months. And so after 6 months, I got a new job, returned to Washington, D.C.
Close to the same neighborhood
You
were shot.
I live about a half a mile from where it is. I'm in that neighborhood.
Are you up and down that street?
Occasionally. I try not to do it at 2 in the morning on a weeknight when nobody else is around. I wouldn't recommend that anyone else do that either. But it's not the most off the beaten path street, and also the neighborhood has changed even in the 5 years since I've been there. So it's a little bit of a different story.
You know, one of the things that change people's mind after they're a victim of a crime is that feeling of helplessness, and that results in anger. Why didn't that happen to you? Did you not feel angry toward these two young people?
I dealt with dealt with. I experienced harbored revenge fantasies for months. I didn't exactly dream, but more like daydreamed, returning to the scene of the crime, you know, armed myself and willing, ready, eager even to exact revenge on the, you know, the first person who tried to rob me again. Once I got my life back on track, once I felt healthy again, once I was working again, once I realized that I hadn't, that this event hadn't really knocked me off the track in life I wanted to be on, that's when those fantasies kind of just went away on their own. And at this point, no, I don't harbor too much anger. You know, I don't know anything about the kids who did it. It's possible to me that they're in jail for some other crime. And if they were ever arrested for what they did to me, I suppose my attitude towards them would depend on what they had learned from it, what level of remorse they had, what brought them to the point of doing it themselves. And if they had none, then sure, I wouldn't be terribly sympathetic to them. But I also don't necessarily think young criminals in D.C. have a great sense of what they're doing when they're doing it. And perhaps they just didn't even realize what it meant to put three bullets in a stranger.
What is your thought when you see somebody who looks at all like your attacker?
I knew that what had happened to me had just been an extremely unlucky thing. And I just understood that it would be fallacious of me to treat everyone who reminded me physically of the people who shot me as if they were criminals as well. And so I never did that. It's that exact logic that keeps me opposed to stop and frisk policies or stop and frisk quotas anyway, because invariably when you treat people who are walking around on the street like suspects, you're going to get a lot of false positives.
Is there no part of your thinking in which you imagine whether or not stop and frisk could have prevented what happened to you? Whether you wonder if I'd had a weapon, I could have stood my ground if there had been stand your ground laws in D.C.?
I've thought about both of those things. I hadn't actually considered what would have happened if I had been armed until people who heard about what had happened to me reached out to me to say that they wished that I had a gun. If I had had a gun, you're talking about potentially 2 to 4 fatalities as opposed to, you know, me being hospitalized for 10 days. As far as stop and frisk goes, I take a position against stop and frisk despite the fact that I know that if those kids had been interceded by a police officer 5-10 minutes before...
If they'd been stopped if they'd been frisked, they would have found a gun.
And remember, these kids before the altercation were doing exactly what I was doing, which was walking around at night. So if they had been stopped and frisked, it would have been for no apparent reason except for being African-American out late at night in a neighborhood with crime, and the officers would have found a gun and taken him away, and I would have walked up the street without incident, most likely. And despite the fact that stop and frisk will, 1 in 1,000 times maybe, stop a crime from happening, that just means that 999 other times somebody gets humiliated on the street for either doing nothing wrong or having a small amount of narcotics on them or something where really nobody innocent was going to be victimized. I think that when people lose track of it after having been victimized in this sort of way, they can lose sight of how little sense it makes to start deploying law enforcement resources that way, treating people as suspects just because they fit a stereotype of a criminal like the kids who shot me did.
Brian Beutler is a senior staff writer at Salon.com. You can find his essay, What I Learned from Getting Shot, at the Salon.com website. He joined us here in our Washington, D.C. studios. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.